We're good.
We're good.
Meandering in the margins of medicine, it's the Short Coat Podcast.
Weird news,
fresh views,
helpful clues and interviews.
By students, for students.
Subscribe to our weekly show at theshortcoat.com.
It's the Short Coat Podcast. I'm your host, Dave Etler, and I'm here with Corey Christensen.
Hello.
I'm here with Lisa Weir.
Hi.
I'm here with Casey McCleary.
Hey.
And I'm here with our special guest co-host, Yolanda Villavazo.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Yolanda joins us from her lofty perch as an alumna of the Carver College of Medicine. Left here in 2009 to pursue her residency in Phoenix. And she's come back to Iowa City because she loves it so.
I do.
Did you really come back because you love it so, or is this the only place that would give you a job?
No, not really. Actually, the opportunity was great, but the weather is still a little bit of a factor.
You mean you like the weather here more than...
I can deal with the winters, but not with the humidity.
Okay. Sorry about that. I'll put in a request. She works here at the VA. She's an internal medicine doc. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me again.
So we're here today because I was with Yolanda because, you know, she came over to visit OSAC the other day and Student Affairs Office, and she was telling us about her... Yolanda's pregnant. She's very pregnant, right?
9 months now.
Almost, she's almost ready to go.
You can almost see it over the radio.
That's right. And that's weird. And, and she was telling us about her, her experience as, a mother of, quote, advanced maternal age. And I thought, wow, this would be fun to talk about on the show.
That's right. I think the word that was exactly used was Jerry OB patient, that is. And, you know, interestingly, it's not uncommon to be called a Jerry OB patient. And I'll tell you that it's not a very nice term to hear on this end. And so I thought it important to kind of discuss it, not only with other fellow women who are of, you know, advanced maternal age, but also with, you know, everybody else in the community, what they think about this.
And Jerry is geriatric. I was very confused when I first heard this because I thought it was like the name or like the World War II term.
Yeah, my grandma was named Jerry. I couldn't really make the combination. Like, what does that have to do with it? What's the criteria for being, for those who don't know, the criteria for being a Jerry OB patient?
That's right. So anytime we have a patient who's 35 years or older, they're considered of advanced maternal age. They do have certain risk factors that we like to at least make sure the women are aware of. One of them being is screening to see if there's any Down syndrome, for instance, Turner syndrome, quite a bit of other genetic testing, and that's usually offered at the age of 35. Aside from that, there's also a little bit more of a risk of a high blood pressure, preeclampsia, eclampsia. Preterm labor is another one. And so, again, OB, Jerry OB, doesn't necessarily you're going to have any one of these things, but your risk of having some of these does increase.
And is the risk that much bigger at 35 than it is at 34?
You know, that's a great question. I'm unable to speak of because I haven't reviewed the studies, but, you know, I would say probably not.
I think it's probably just one of those things where, like, they have to draw a cutoff line somewhere. So
you actually already have children, a child.
Correct. I have a 6-year-old at home, Daniel.
That's right. So, you know, pregnancy is not new to you, obviously. But how describe the ways in which your experience is different or has been different this time around.
Right. So maybe I should tell you about my first pregnancy. I was 33. with my first pregnancy. And even then, there was one instance where the provider had mentioned that I was very close to advanced maternal age. And because of that, they would give me an option of doing the triple screen. That's when they do the genetic testing. And at that time, I said, well, I'll go ahead and do it because it's best to know. It's not going to change anything about what I would do differently, but at least I would be aware of something that I should maybe prepare for. So at that time, my test came back positive. And so when it came back positive, they start doing a series of other testing. So my experience then had already been not a very good experience at the beginning of that pregnancy. But I was aware from that time that being pregnant again would probably throw me into that advanced maternal age category. So with this pregnancy, you know, we did take some few years to think if we were going to get pregnant again. And when we decided, the first thing that came into my mind was, oh my God, I'm advanced maternal age. It's going to be all over my chart.
I'm ancient. I'm an old withered crone.
So that's exactly what happened. In fact, in the first visit, I was not only called an advanced maternal age, but the term Jerry OB patient came up. And again, I wasn't sure if that was maybe a little bit of a joke, because I thought, not a very nice term to use, right? I had been warned about that, in fact, before I went into my first appointment from another fellow provider who had been in a situation similar to mine with respect to her age and being pregnant at a certain age. But I was caught off guard. And from that moment, I think the flavor of this new pregnancy kind of changed. The risk factors were there. They're there every time I go to a visit. And so, again, what's my blood pressure every time I go in there? That's important. What's my blood sugars? What are they doing? Do I have gestational diabetes? Yes or no? And by the way, I did miss that, fail that gestational diabetes test by 1 point. So, again, I did meet that criteria for risk factors, but again, does a point make a difference? Yes or no? In my case, it does, because now I have to check blood sugars 5 times a day. So it's not very easy, but again, it makes me very self-conscious every time I go in to see that provider.
Hasn't it been tempting to just go, you know, forget it? To heck with it. I'm going to not worry so much about it.
I think that the idea is this. Do I cheat on my diet all the time? Mm-hmm. So that's my way of saying to heck with it.
You and everyone else.
So yes, baby shower, I was going to have that slice of cake no matter what, right? And I put in my little glucose logbook, baby shower, expect high blood, you know, blood glucose. And it was really high, and she forgave me for that one. So, you know, the thing is, I think to be, you know, a lot of women don't have the medical background that I do. And I think I'm in a very different position to make some arguments maybe for or against what I do and don't want to do. But, you know, I'm not going to lie. It's been a very tense relationship with my provider, I think, sometimes. And as I was talking to you, Dave, about it the other day is, you know, I do question what the studies say. And when I talk, you know, I do read on my own independently. So when I bring up some of these studies, I do realize that I make her a little bit nervous. And I think it's just all part of being a well-informed patient, right? But I think I caught her one time consulting with a high-risk OB provider. And they discussed my case where I was at, and I was able to win one battle. And
that sounds like you like came around the corner and they were standing there and their eyes got wide and they were like,
something like that, I think. So what had happened was we were discussing really when my due date should be. Oh. If that makes any sense. I do have a due date, right? Yeah. But the due date can't be the real true due date because I'm Jerry OB. So they will not let you go to term. It'll be an earlier delivery. And I try to ask them why that was. If I'm feeling fine, I'm doing great, blood pressure's under control, I think I can make my due date without having a C-section or induction. So I think after going back and forth, we compromised. And the compromise was that they were going to put the due date 3 days before the actual due date. which I find very funny and hilarious. So, again, one of the things that I question is, what are the protocols, or what kind of guidelines or rules are we following for some of these things? Because, you know, it could have been another patient in a similar situation, and would she have been put at 3 days before her due date? I don't know. Maybe I argued enough and I didn't have a much earlier C-section date, you know, 2 weeks prior or something like that.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people who are not fans, especially recently. There's sort of a movement against medically induced births, sort of choosing to have your baby at an earlier time, or convenience births, you know, so that you can like pre-schedule when you're going to have off work and stuff. There are some people who love that, and there are some people who really, really hate it. Like, as a doctor and a mother, do you have opinions about that? Like, you're probably more informed about it than I am.
That's a great question. In fact, I'll tell you what my fellow friends who are currently pregnant and making some of this decision, I'll tell you my personal opinion. So when I brought this topic about a due date and convenience, you see, I have not found one woman who wants to be induced or schedule a C-section. And I respect all of that, because I think it's natural. Again, the state of being pregnant is natural. So having baby decide when its birthday is going to be, I think it's wonderful. As far as my opinion on, you know, being a doctor and scheduling, I kind of agree with them. I want baby to pick the birth date, right, that they want. And obviously, on the flip side of that coin, I'm not going to put baby at risk either. So if they need me to come in weekly, you know, a couple weeks before the actual due date, I'll be there to make sure things are going fine. And if you know, something wasn't going fine, of course, we can induce and or C-section if that's what it had to be. But to schedule a C-section 6 months out, I mean, it sounds very atypical, I think.
Yeah, that's just my first thought when you brought that up. I was like, there are so many risks involved in an early delivery in a C-section. And if everything is going fine, like, being advanced maternal age is riskier than all of
surgery?
That. Like, I really find that hard to believe.
That's what I question myself, too. If everything is fine, like I said, your vitals are fine. There's no signs of the preeclampsia, which is, you know, the swelling, and, you know, if there's no cardiac conditions, if you're gaining appropriate weight, which I'll talk a little bit about that one.
And appropriate weight.
You know, if all of those things are, you know, kind of right in line, I don't see why we should be too worried about scheduling that C-section, right? But, you know, again, I'd like to see that evidence that they're using to make those recommendations to patients. I think it's important to kind of stick with the same story, but kind of have some leniency built in, because not all women are created equal. We all don't start with the same weight, right? I did start with a little bit heavier weight, and I was first told that, you know, my appropriate weight at the end of pregnancy would be somewhere between having gained a total of 10 to 15 pounds. That was my personalized weight gain. As we went through pregnancy, I was told differently. I gained 5 pounds, I remember, and I was 6.5 to 7 months pregnant, and I had gained a total of 5. And she said, "You're gaining too much weight." And so I said, "Really? I mean, I feel fine. I 5 pounds, I didn't think it was a big deal. You said 15, so I think I have 10, you know, a margin of 10 more pounds to go." So that was the time where, again, my gestational diabetes was diagnosed by 1 point. Mm-hmm. Again, mm-hmm. If I could remind you.
Let's be clear.
This, yeah, exactly. I asked for a repeat, by the way, on that test, and the answer was, "Nope, you failed it." So because you failed, we have to follow protocol where you will check your blood sugars 5 times a day and report weekly until you give birth. So that's the protocol. But again, I've not only lost those 5 pounds, but I've lost an additional 10 pounds during pregnancy. So, and if that's deemed appropriate, I'm not sure.
So wait, as a total, you've lost weight?
I've lost weight.
And that's, so you may be the first pregnant person to ever report that.
So
is that a bad thing?
I specifically remember hearing in lecture, regardless of your starting weight, you should never lose weight during pregnancy.
And so that was the that's the discussion we're having right now currently, is that, you know, if I've lost weight, and you know, and the thing is, that it doesn't worry me as much because I don't feel unhealthy about it. I did start a little bit heavier. So, I mean, I could have lost some weight before I got pregnant, you know, all of that. But I, you know, it was kind of a surprise. So, you know, we didn't have time to lose the weight before. But I feel fine. But I think that's what's gotten her thinking a little bit more now about really when my due date should be. Is this baby now a little bit too small for its dates?
You're confusing them. You're being atypical now. This is your fault. You're being atypical.
Right.
And you're also a doctor. So the question is, are you, you know, the question becomes, are you being a good patient?
Right.
Right.
I'm not being a good patient, I think. I mean, I've done exactly everything that they've done. I mean, asked for, you know, the blood sugars, the weight thing.
But you're like, but questioning them.
And I'm questioning them. And I want them to fuss up and say, yes, you can have your baby at due date. The weight thing, I think, I'm surprised they're not concerned about that one. I thought that one was going to be the most concerning of all, maybe. But I think we'll see on next Tuesday's visit, but I think they're very happy about it. And the thing is, if we have one more ultrasound ordered, I'll know at that moment in time is that she's really worried about it. There shouldn't be another ultrasound ordered, but if she does, then it's a hint to me that there might be some concern that it might not be.
You know, the funny thing about this is that I feel like you're, it's almost like you're a CIA analyst. You know, you're like, well, if we, you know, if she does this, then we'll know what they're thinking, you know, they're thinking, what they're planning, and then we can launch a counterattack.
It's like spy versus spy. Yeah. Like the mind game is involved in doctors treating doctors.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, honestly, I mean, in all reality, I would not put this pregnancy in any form of risk.
Sure.
You know, I am. You know, if they say this is gestational diabetes, I will abide and do the checks 5 times a day. I will cut the carbohydrates as the nutritionist suggested, and which I have. And I think that's the one reason I followed it to the T, thus all this weight loss all of a sudden. But I hope.
Oh, so it's their fault.
Well,
maybe we should stop trying to find faults.
All right.
But no, I guess my concern was, I'm just one case. How many other women out there feel the same way as myself? And I will tell you that many of my colleagues who are currently pregnant, and by the way, I have about 8 pregnant friends right now, so we've talked extensively about these subjects. None of them really feel comfortable with, and I will say this, in a more university setting where these protocols seem to be a little bit more rigid, not less flexible. So most of them are actually going to more of a community hospital setting and or using midwives.
Because,
you know,
because of the flexibility? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think because of the rigidity of these protocols that they feel like they're made to feel like they're sick, you know? And again, we're not having that support from the provider that they feel that they need.
So they're less stressed than you are.
Something like that.
Yeah. I think a lot of that protocol probably comes not only from, you know, wanting to make sure you really don't miss anything on your patients, but a fear of litigation.
Oh, and yes.
Yeah. Like, that's a huge part of medicine. Like, I can only imagine it gets twice as bad when a baby's involved.
I think that's true. I mean, I'm not very versed in the OB litigation world, but I do know that their malpractice insurance is
huge.
It's very high.
Yeah.
It's understandable. You're not only treating one patient, you're treating 2 patients or potentially 3 or 4, right, sometimes.
Yeah.
But so, yes, I think that's what drives maybe a certain institutions or practices to practice a certain way.
Yeah. Well, let's take a quick break. We'll be back in just a second on the Short Code Podcast.
The Art of Medicine podcast explores topics in medicine through the lens of the arts and social sciences. Learn about an epileptic woman who created a virtual reality grand mal seizure, what doctors can learn from jazz musicians, and the experience of sexual assignment in a medicalized body. Download us on iTunes and visit us at www.theartofmedicinepodcast.com. We are a member of the Vocalis Network, the podcast network for medical students. Please listen to our partner podcasts at vocalisnetwork.wix.com/listen.
We're back with Yolanda Villavazo. Yolanda, how does culture, you're Latino. Mm-hmm. How does culture play into this? Can you tell us a little more about that?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's another hot topic, I think, within this conversation is many a times I have heard personally from family members and or even local community members here in Iowa City that being pregnant is not necessarily a state of being sick, right? So it's a healthy part of life. You know, women have been doing this since the beginning of time, and they don't understand, at least they ask me because of my physician background, why is it that we need to go to the doctor so many times?
One of my professors said probably one of my favorite things that I've heard is pregnancy is not a disease state. We don't want to think of it as a disease state, although it is a lot like mild high output cardiac failure.
That's right. You know, and it's very real. You know, the female physiology changes quite a bit. But, you know, when you have to go into every month, right, the first few months, and then you get into your late second trimester, you start going every couple of weeks, and then towards the end you start going every week. I mean, you're there quite a bit, right? Your schedule at work has to really be changed, and you have to make a lot of accommodations to be there. But again, if you're like myself, being a Jerry OB patient and having to go that many times, it only adds that much stress. And having a Latino background, I feel it's so contradictory to what I believe in. This is natural. I feel healthy. I feel that if I felt any problems, that I would report that and I would go into the doctor myself. I'd call them and let them know. But I think, again, Latinos tend to have bigger families. So, you know, the state of being pregnant is not unfamiliar to the Latino culture. And we really don't like to go to the doctor that often. You know, we want to leave us alone. We'll be there, you know, when we need to be. Now, I'm also not advocating for no prenatal care, but there should be some flexibility with that too. And again, risk factors are important, right? If you've had a previous child that was, you know, had certain risks, then I would understand where that particular mother in their second pregnancy would have to come in maybe a little bit more than, you know, somebody else. But again, I think this rigidity that we have in our current system, and I do, from my experience, just talk about more of a university setting versus a community setting, it has to be a little bit more flexible.
I guess that makes me wonder, in terms of the rigidity, are we kind of pushing out the people who maybe need it the most? Like, the people who really need the flexibility are also the people who really need the prenatal care. You know, people in lower income jobs that you can't just take time off. You don't have paid time off. And those are the people who really need more flexibility. And if we're not willing to do that, are they going to just not come at all? And then we're way behind where we started?
That's a great question. I think I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think, you know, my schedule is somewhat flexible because I do work for the, you know, across the street from the university, and so I'm able to come. But I can see where a Latino woman who's still working throughout pregnancy lives, you know, 5 to 10 miles out, can't get that flexibility in her work schedule. She might no-show to that appointment. And, you know, they'll reschedule her and things like that. And, you know, the language barriers also are something real. And she may or may not understand the reason why that visit is. Maybe it's the time to check the gestational diabetes. Maybe it's because they need her to come in because there was something in her ultrasound that was quite not right and they wanted to follow up. So, yes, I do agree that there are some situations where we might not be targeting specific populations that need to be targeted.
Are you involved in any other aspects of like Latino healthcare? Is that like an area of interest for you at all?
Absolutely. It all started when I came here to the University of Iowa as a medical student. I got involved with folks up in Columbus Junction, Muscatine, Williamsburg. First through the mobile clinic, then through a program called the Migrant Health Program.
Is that Proteus now?
And Proteus. Yes. And I got all of them together to start talking, and then we started to do these clinics together. Specifically, I helped quite a bit doing the breast cancer surveillance program for the migrant women, specifically in Williamsburg. So I've had kind of a sweet spot for that population because, you know, they've grown on me and we know each other quite well. And there's quite a bit of health needs in that population. But, you know, now having come back to Iowa City, this population has grown quite a bit.
Oh, really?
You can find it here in Iowa City. You don't have to even go to Williamsburg.
Yeah, I think there's another large Hispanic population. I want to say West Liberty.
Yeah.
Is that, yeah.
It's a turkey packing plant there.
Oh, yeah. Because I know we always have to have tons of translators.
Right.
And I get to practice my sad, broken Spanish.
Oh, no, that's good.
No, it gives everybody a good giggle.
How do you say, "I'm sorry that you're so freaking old, mom"?
Mom-to-be in Spanish.
En español. A ver, puedo decirlo. Perdóname, pero usted está un poquito muy viejo para tener un niño.
See, she probably said that was.
She did. I heard old.
Okay.
I heard the only word I got out of that too. I was stuck on trying to remember how to say I'm sorry. Like did.
Lo siento.
Lo siento.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's like the feels.
A little Spanish lesson there for our listeners. It's interesting to me that. I was thinking about the parallels between, you know, sort of overly medicalized pregnancy and overly medicalized death. So we've got the two ends of that, of the life spectrum and, you know.
Well, if you think about it, it's like a car race, okay? So, like, people watch racing for the wrecks, or at least that's why I watched racing when I was a kid.
I can't wait to hear where you're going.
That's what I'm thinking. Okay, but the most wrecks happen at the beginning and at the end of the race, when the cars are speeding up.
I don't
and
want
when
you as a doctor.
They're,
risks are,
hey!
Risks are high.
I'm just speaking the truth.
Risks are high.
But the risks are a lot higher. You know, all the cars are speeding up. They're still getting used to the track and, like, used to the, you know, maybe the changes. Maybe there's still a little water on the track or something if it rained earlier.
I get you.
And then, you know, at the end, you've got any debris from previous wrecks that, you know, they get most of them off, but they float around and people are trying to dodge for position. That's when you have the most wrecks. So everybody really watches like a hawk for those times. So maybe medicine is like that too. Like you have the most risk and the most like medical wrecks.
I'm so glad you, okay, I'm so glad you brought this up because we really need the NASCAR fans as listeners
on the NASCAR community.
Well, I mean, the risks are higher and you know, more things can go wrong at the end of life as well as I guess so the at least the risks feel greater. I don't know if the risks are that much greater in the beginning of life as they are at the end of life, but the point is that it feels more important, I guess, maybe the
at the end of life
at both the beginning and the end of life, because you're dealing, you know, you're dealing with a tiny, tiny baby in the beginning,
it's
and at
so
the end you're
helpless.
Dealing with somebody who you know we have loved all of our lives and who now seems to need our help and seems to need, you know, aggressive intervention to keep them around.
Right.
Kind of thing.
They're both very, in some ways, very helpless populations.
Yes.
Like babies are definitely helpless. And as you get towards the end of life, it's a huge, like, emotional problem that people lose a lot of their agency and ability.
Mm-hmm. I think the way we see it in medicine sometimes is babies couldn't help it. They were born genetically. And the more elderly population is more cumulative, right? So you smoked for many years or unfortunately you were obese for many years or, you know.
That would be the debris from previous wrecks.
That's right. That's right.
I'm sorry. I've had way too much exposure to racing.
Well, you
because
did grow up
of,
in Newton.
I know, exactly. Shout out to Newton. Yeah, we have a speedway where they have races, and I worked there for like 5 summers.
You worked at the races?
I worked at the races.
What was your job?
Being bored.
Yeah. Oh.
They paid me to be bored.
Oh dear.
No. It was actually, if you were a race fan, it would be the perfect job. I was an usher, so I got to stand sort of near the track. I could watch all the cars go round and round, but I could also watch when the cars weren't doing anything.
And
tell people to move off of one part of the concrete to the other part of the concrete.
The dude who waves the flag, is that his only job or her only job?
I have no idea. Oh,
okay. So you've been thinking about this for a long time.
Yeah, this has been percolating.
This is like thesis.
Do you have any weird parallels you would like to
actually
to
I kind of do.
Yeah.
Well, I grew up on a farm and my mother's a veterinarian, so I've actually seen the animal version of this
is
all
so
the time.
Iowa.
I know, right?
Raising farm animals.
No, so my sister-in-law is pregnant right now and she's also high risk because she's a type 1 diabetic. Mm-hmm. And it's just funny because she found out during lambing season, and so she was watching all this lambing going on. And
What is lambing season?
It's when they have lambs,
like
when sheep have babies. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And it's, I mean, it's like childbirth in the 1800s, mm-hmm. kind of.
Oh.
So, yeah, it's very different.
They just stand
I mean,
there
not
and
really
the babies
different.
Fall out of them?
Well, not really, but
I don't
yeah.
know a lot like about lambing.
I mean, there's no medications. It's just like you kind of watch and you can tell when they're not feeling well. And that's when you try to do something.
She gestures.
Oh. Yeah. Well, no, I'm just saying, you know, she said like, if I'm not feeling well, then that's when I would call and do stuff. And you can watch and know when they're not feeling well. And
by the type of cry the lamb makes?
No, not like the mother.
Oh,
like you can tell when the mother's not
the mother,
doing well, and you
mother.
Can tell like they when their baby drops and they're gonna have a lamb and things like that. Just very different feel to it.
Actually, I really like to point when you say when the baby drops. So those are all signs, right, that we look for. And I think sometimes doctoring gets away from those natural signs that we should be looking for, and it, again, try to over medicalize with testing, mm-hmm. imaging, and all of that. And so I kind of wonder, why not go back to the old clinical exam that a physician was trained to do to begin with, right?
Yes.
Testing and imaging is amazing and so helpful in so many ways, but there's also a temptation to rely too heavily on it.
That's right.
I know I've mentioned before that, like, whenever we learn the physical exams, I'm like, can't I just do an x-ray for this? But, yeah. I mean, that's added cost, that's added exposure to x-rays, and you're missing that sort of human touch. Like, it's just completely unnecessary, and you might miss some things.
Right. My mother said, you know, I never had an ultrasound for none of you three. So this ultrasound business is all new to us, right? Because I invited her to see if she wanted to know what the gender of the baby was. And her first initial thought was, why wouldn't you wait until the baby is actually born? Why would you want to know now? And I said, oh, because the image will let us know, right? But it's a very unnatural, again, mm-hmm. thing for them back then to have had a ultrasound.
You think we'll get to the point where like, you know, we'll know their SAT scores before they come in?
With all this genetic testing, you never know.
Well, I'll be impressed when ultrasounds can tell you the baby's actual gender, because I always think that, like, gender unveiling parties are so silly. And
do people have,
like,
specific parties?
Yeah. Oh, my God. If you go on Amazon, you can get, like, scratch cards.
Just go to Pinterest.
And you give them to your guests, and they'll be like, boy or girl, scratch it off. Oh, it's a boy.
Yeah, people do, like, crazy things, like bake colored frosting into cupcakes, and then when you bite into it, you know what the baby is.
Yes,
way too much work for me. I mean,
which is hilarious.
On.
And like
I need my sleep.
I swear it's kind of fun, but then you're making all of these like pre-decided judgments about what your child is going to be and mm-hmm. who your child is going to be. And God forbid, you know, if your child be transgender, then everything that you thought is
take back all your cupcakes.
Yeah, I have to go around and pass out different color cigars now. You know, and like, I think a lot of this has come because I'm a big transgender advocate, that it drives me kind of nuts now when people try to gender their babies early. I'm like, just let your baby decide. It's going to decide what it is and who it is.
You know what I love? The thing I loved most about my wife's pregnancy with our daughter was the external version.
What does that
I think
mean?
I think that's what they call it. But basically, at the end of the pregnancy, Coraline was not in the right position. So they,
Were they like flip them?
Yes. They asked us to come in and I sat in the back of the room while, two residents and an OB,
did the most barbaric looking things to my wife, like pushing on the belly to like try to get the baby to flip.
That is old school.
And, yeah, it's totally old school, I think.
Dave, if you don't mind me asking, how many years ago was that?
She's 7 now.
Hmm. That's interesting because I asked the same question with my first birth. He was a breech.
Mm. Yeah.
Right? Oh. And they said, sorry, it's breech. We have no choice. We're going straight for a C-section.
What is that? What does breech actually mean?
So breech really means is the head is really not in the pelvic in the pelvis. So okay. It's really not coming down.
Like and it's
so,
coming out sideways
so
or something.
So it could be sideways. Ooh. It could be kind of pointing up. So they would have had that procedure done potentially me, what was it, 6 years ago? But yeah. I was told that we no longer practice this way. Oh. And so...
So maybe we got the cutoff, I guess.
I think so. So, cutoff.
You know, C-section it was. There was no option. And so I was reading, if, I'm glad you brought that up, an article maybe a month ago about mm-hmm. having residents now being trained to know how to do these maneuvers so that we can go back to a non-C-section state, which you know, I think it's good. But again, I didn't have the experience that you had of watching this and what your wife
it was
would
terrifying.
Have to say about that.
It was terrifying. Looking back,
would she prefer it, though, to being cut open?
It didn't work. It may have worked. The Coraline did not flip at that moment, but by the time... Christine was ready to give birth. By the time Coraline was ready to come out, she had flipped.
Wow.
So not really. I don't think we can say that the maneuver was the thing that did it mm-hmm. or something. Maybe Coraline was like, oh, they want me to be in this position, which would, by the way, be totally against Coraline's personality to do anything that somebody else wants her to do. But
maybe that's why she was waiting until nobody was looking, and then she was like, yeah, okay, now I can do it.
Maybe I'll sneak up.
But yeah, just sitting in the back of the room, I was like, and Christine is very ticklish. So she was laughing, and I think it was Mary Grace Elson mm-hmm. who was there, and she was like, well, that's the first time I've heard a mother laugh through this process. So anyway, yeah. Well,
yeah, but I mean, at least you tried it, and if somebody, you know, if they try it and it works, then you don't have to have a C-section, and they try it and they don't work, then, well, you were going to have a C-section anyway, and at least you tried it. It didn't actually, it's one of those things that doesn't actually cost you anything to try.
Right. Mm-hmm. Except for the fact that if residents are no longer being trained to do
exactly.
that, it might be riskier.
Right.
True, you don't want an untrained person poking around at your baby.
And I don't know, shouldn't, maybe these things should be trained just because... You know, you might not always have the ability to do the whatever is considered the ideal. So, you know, mom goes in and is ready to have her C-section and the power goes out.
I see.
You know what I'm saying? Like maybe at this, I don't know if it's
global health
point, you know,
or post-apocalypse.
Global health, right. Post-apocalypse, that's going to be important.
No, exactly. I was going to say that because when
yes.
I was out in Africa, I will tell you that, you know, birthing in Africa in a little small hut, I mean, you don't have all this fancy technology. You don't have the ultrasound or even monitors. You have your stethoscope. And again, going back to what the mother's symptoms, signs and symptoms are. And I will tell you, sure, I admit it, it's higher mortality in Africa than in the infant mortality, mother mortality in the United States. But I will tell you, I've seen some of the most beautiful births, natural births at home. When everything kind of flows and does that. And, you know, I will tell you that the midwives and physicians working in those kind of instances, they're very well versed in what they're doing. So, yes, I haven't seen Dave's version of the manipulation and maneuvers. I have seen a version of that mm-hmm. that was very successful.
And then there's the whole cascade of interventions issue with pregnancy. So just having that external version... it being an intervention may have increased the risk that further interventions down the road might have been necessary.
Well, I think that's interesting that you bring that up because, again, there's no... if you do intervene in one way, you react to that, right? So the woman's body is not going to necessarily react as you expect it sometimes, right? So just because you give that epidural now, it doesn't mean that it's not going to wear out in a few hours and you're still laboring, right? It doesn't mean that the baby is not going to decelerate you know, in the next hour, and then you're still going to have to go into that intervention and C-section. So one of the biggest things that I've also kind of gone back and forth with my OB is that they place a lot of emphasis on planning it out. Planning, you know, what's plan? And I personally do not like this whole idea of birth plan. In fact, I think you have to have, again, that flexibility. I can go in there right now thinking it's going to be natural, it's going to be a VBAC, but I might have a C-section, you know, altogether. And I don't know that it will be. Again, I tell her, let's play it by ear. It makes her feel a little bit uncomfortable when I say, let's play it by ear, because, again, we want a plan for you. What are you going to do? Are you willing to do a C-section? Yes. You know, I'm not going to put baby at risk. Do you want to give it a go first? Yes. You know, so, and I'm thinking,
so
I'm
keep being, it simple.
Right. I'm thinking I'm being a very easy patient, but I think on the other end, I'm being a very difficult patient because maybe I'm not that clear.
Probably a little of both. I mean, everybody wants to know what's going to happen and feel safe.
But I would have thought that that would be okay to be, you know, like to not have a rigid plan. I mean, it's a, we're talking about birth here. We're not talking about, you know, knee replacement. I mean, you know, where you can plan things out, baby happens.
Well, that's the thing, right? Can we really plan a birth, right? Can we schedule you for 7 in the morning on a middle of the week instead of a Friday or Saturday or Sunday, right? Because it's going to work better for the schedule, for not only for the patient's schedule, but for the provider's schedule. In fact, I was told that 4th of July weekend, which starts on Friday, was not an option.
Now we're getting down to the...
Not an option for scheduling anything. Only if baby decided that in one of those three days it would be a natural birth, and then yes, they would.
It's very kind of them.
That's part of the medicalization of birth, I think, the planning. Mm-hmm. It's just a really good, you know, like normally you wouldn't be able to plan something like that. Like it's just going to pop out when it pops out. But
because if we can,
we want to.
If we can,
we want
we will.
To plan things.
Yes. Again, baby girl, please pick your birth date whenever you want. That's what we want.
So listeners, I don't know. Maybe by the time you listen to this, the question will be moot. But let's all hope for a nice, easy path to this baby.
Oh, yeah. That's what we're hoping for.
Good. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
It was lovely talking about you. Good luck with everything. And I hope that the sleepless nights aren't too bad.
Well, they're starting up now, so we'll see. 3 more weeks to go.
All right.
I just wanted to talk about this really cool thing that I learned. It's totally unrelated to babies, but I found out that you can get magnets implanted into your fingertips. One of my friends had it done, and you can.
One of your friends had it done.
One of my friends had it done.
Okay.
So I actually felt the magnet. She has one in her thumb and one in her ring finger, and you can feel like the squeeze between them, and then you can feel the magnet in there. It's crazy. It's so cool.
Do you lose sensation like touching things?
You do for a little while. So they make a little slit in your finger, and it has to be done by a professional. You know, if you're gonna do it, you should.
Professional what?
Implant professional, I think they're called.
Okay. Is that like the professional that put my piercing in here?
Probably. She's really into body modification stuff. So I'm sure I'll come back with all kinds of other interesting things she knows about.
Oh, yeah. My piercing was in my clavicle. I should. That could have been unclear. It is no longer there.
Anyway, wait, like through the bone?
It was right under my... No, not through the bone. It's in the skin. It was a skin implant.
Interesting.
I'm probably going to get it redone.
Well, yeah, maybe something like that. Probably similar.
Yeah,
similar
maybe like
crowd.
Made a slit and kind of put out a little hole and... Huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why would anybody do this magnet thing?
So, for one thing, it's just cool. I think she's slowly turning herself into a robot. You can do little party tricks like pick up paper clips or bottle caps and stuff like that, depending on how strong your magnet is. And like you can apparently feel it flip around, but it gives you almost another sense, like a quasi another sense, especially if you get, some people get them in all five fingers, and you lose sensation for a little while, like while it's healing. It's like any wound. They make a slit, pry it open, stick the magnet in, and then use surgical glue, seal it back up. Everything's very sterile. But if you get enough, you start, like, even with the just the one, you can sense magnetic fields. Like you can feel the magnet reacting to those, or turning, or like making your finger tingle. So it's almost like having a new sense implanted in your hand. And apparently some people who get them done in all five fingers start to be able to like determine some amount of spatial orientation based on the magnetic fields that are around them. So like, I don't know, if she gets close to like electronics, she can tell if they're running, or like a motor will flip it around in her finger.
Like my computer turns off when there's a magnet on the corner. So
that would be really strong.
That would be
inconvenient. They're not that strong of magnets.
Yeah, how strong are they? Are we talking about neodymium like super magnets, or
wouldn't that like rip your skin off?
I don't.
Yeah.
Only if you go in an MRI. Yeah, you can't have an MRI if you have them. That's a downside. They have to take it out, or it's gonna like tear your finger off.
So you would never spill your beer again.
That's aluminum.
Is your beer metal?
Beer comes in aluminum.
I'm imagining like a glass bottle, and I'm like, what?
A magnet.
But yeah, she can tell if things are magnetic or not. She can tell if like if you were doing electrical engineering, this might be cool. You could tell if something was working, or if the power had been cut, just by putting your finger near it.
Well, that's all very interesting.
So, fun body modification fact of the day.
Well, good. We're gonna close this out, but stay tuned after the credits for the weird disease of the week.
What is your?
I was gonna say weird disease of the week. What's this?
Yeah.
It's a new thing.
The Short Code Podcast is brought to you by the... I've got it written down here and I can't even do it. If you like what you heard today on the Short Code Podcast, please leave us a review and some stars on iTunes or Stitcher. Before we go, we'd like to invite you to tell us about your moment of truth. If something strange or wonderful happened to you, if you're annoyed or pleased about something, or if you want to suggest a story idea to us, leave a message at theshortcode.com. Do follow and talk to us on Twitter so we can all stay up to date on what's happening at the margins of medicine. The show is made possible by the strange world we live in and a generous donation by Carver College of Medicine Student Government and the Writing and Humanities Program. Our executive producer is Jason Lewis. Our intern is Corey Christensen. Our opening music is by Dr. Vox, and our closing music is by C2C. Talk to you in a week.
This week's disease of the week is man in the barrel syndrome.
That's a good one.
I know. So it's a neurological syndrome. Your legs still work and your cranial nerves still work, so you can still see and move your eyes and stuff, but your arms are just frozen. And it's called man in the barrel syndrome.
Wait, you're stretching your arms out to your side.
I'm demonstrating because there's chair arms.
Oh, okay, got it.
But they're usually just like straight down and stiff arms. You can't really move your arms. And it's called man in the barrel syndrome because historically, doctors thought that it looked like the punishment where you put, is it like a drunkard? You put them in a barrel, and the only, like, their legs work so they can walk around without falling, but their arms stick out really weird.